Coming up next on Tech News Today, Conversation AI is a new machine learning platform aimed at tackling trolls. Lyft envisions a post-car ownership world for 2025. Samsung rushed the Note 7 to market, and we all know what happened next. GoPro shows off its pricey new drone and camera line. And did Nest just reveal the new Pixel phone? Was it intentional? I don't know. We'll talk about that and more with Scott Johnson up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1601, recorded Monday, September 19th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we talk about everything you need to know about technology. And I've heard it's better with Pop-Tarts.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, running the prompter is better with Pop-Tarts, as Burke is proving right now. Actually, you've never prompted as good as now, so I believe it. Which is not to say anything bad about your previous attempts. I'm just saying I think we got to give you Pop-Tarts every time now. Okay. He's like, move on.
I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. I sometimes say things that are awkward. That's what I do. But this isn't awkward because I'm actually really super stoked. We have not had a full episode guest in quite a while on the show, at least not when both of us are here. And today we welcome Scott Johnson to the show. How's it going, Scott?
I'm so good. Always good to be back with you guys. I'm better with Pop-Tarts. Everything's better with Pop-Tarts.
It's true.
That's life. Mm-hmm. Life is just better with Pop-Tarts, I think they say. Frog Pants Network. What? I don't know. What's the latest coming out of Frog Pants Studios? Like, any news to share? I want some news from you.
Ridiculous things happening. I got this for you. When I come on the show, and I've been on with you before, and been on with Megan before, and both of you before, I like the video game conversations. I like to talk about what's happening in gaming. I recently had a major format change to a video game show I do called Boop, B-O-O-P, where I went from kind of the standard, hey, let's talk about the news sort of format, which everybody does. And I thought I want to try something a little bit different. So I'm just going to say this. If you like essay-based material, sort of This American Lifestyle, and you like that mashed with subjects and interviews and things to deal with the video game world and its industry, you might want to give that thing a listen. And you can find more at frogpants.com/boop.
I'm excited about that. I'm going to add it to my feed. So you mean it's not just like people gabbing like us, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's like, I mean, do you have like the connection music, the da-da-da, that kind of thing?
Well, I'm as big a fan as any of us here of shows where people are gabbing. I like this one. I like shows where people are talking about the latest and greatest, and all that stuff's great. But it just occurred to me that I was in a sea, especially in the video game space specifically, I was in a sea of sameness. Everybody was all talking about the same stuff. And while personality matters a lot and who's saying it matters a lot, I just said, well, why is nobody doing this? And I thought, well, then I'll just do this. So it's a little more work. It takes some, you know, additional planning and some editing and things that I don't normally do. But I'm really happy with the results. So I hope gamers find it entertaining and insightful.
Excellent.
Boop.
Yeah, it sounds great. Frogpants.com to check that out and all sorts of other things as Scott's going. He's a busy, busy guy. Yeah. Let's talk about some news. We're here. We might as well. Is there anything that artificial intelligence can't do? Its biggest challenge to date could possibly be battling trolls on the internet, because we all know that's expert level stuff right there. Google is taking up the challenge with conversation AI, tools that are designed to use the power of machine learning to locate trollish and abusive language so it can be acted on. Basically, it's using AI to make people be nice. Be nice. What do you think? Is this going to succeed? Is this too big of a challenge even for AI? What do you think, Scott?
Well, this reminds me of the recent conversation surrounding Facebook's big mess they got into with showing the Vietnam era photo of the very iconic photo of the girl fleeing mm-hmm. uh, a napalm strike in Vietnam, and she happened to have all of her clothes burned off of her. So what you had there was a naked person, and Facebook's algorithm saw that as, oh no, there's a minor shown naked on Facebook. We can't have this. And obviously the machine learning there decided to remove it. Well, there's lots of conversation and arguments about, well, this is not the right context for that, and therefore this was, you know, not good. The machine didn't do very well. So all I'm saying about this is I'm all for machine learning. I'm all for AI figuring out ways to make our lives run smoother and to, you know, be able to handle content in a way that's conducive to whoever the audience is, and all that stuff is important and good. However, we are not done with these moments of computer faux pas, nor are we done with the companies in charge of these things, in this case, Google, in their case, Facebook, blaming it on the algorithms and blaming it on the machine learning. So the very thing that they're touting as the hot new technology that they've got their hands in is also the thing they seem to want to distance themselves from when those AIs make big mistakes.
What I think is unique about Jigsaw is, you know, this whole project, it's a global project in order to make people safer. And so at the same time they're working on keeping people safe from free speech, they're also working on curbing harassment. So the two things together, like say for being able to have free speech and at the same time keep people safer from harassment, which, you know, making sure those two things are intertwined, I think is really important here. And I would love to see it work. I mean, I'm with you, like Facebook blamed the algorithm for that picture. But at the same time, I thought that was a positive story. You know, that picture got put up right away. It happened fast, you know, and the algorithm said, okay, that's a picture that, you know, that deserves to be up. It's not pornography, you know, it's not child pornography. So I believe in the algorithm to work, but I totally agree with you that the big companies are going to blame the algorithm for as long as they can. So
it'll just take a while. And the nice thing to remember is that iconic photo has never left humanity. It never left our consciousness. It never left the places where it's always been a thing of historical record. It just left Facebook for a little bit. And we do have a tendency to freak out and want to jump on Facebook or whoever immediately and go, look what you've done and look how terrible your algorithm is and you're a bad website. But at the end of the day, we're talking about a blip in the system. And I'm like you. I'm very positive and kind of rising road sort of attitude about the future of this stuff. And I'm actually pretty excited about it. It's the false positives that are going to bite us in the butt, though, and that's going to happen for a little bit. And I might not even be able to type "bite me in the butt" on a website.
Don't try typing in "butt" in iOS messages because you don't know what you're going to get.
That's true.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, I don't know why they don't do it the Instagram way. Like Instagram, what they're doing now is, you know, you can filter your own words, and then if someone posts a comment with that word on your picture, the only person who sees that is the person that posted the comment. Like, I love that because it's like that. I don't see that as a violation of free speech. And I love the idea that troll thinks that there were, you know, whatever they needed to get out of themselves by posting that word on someone's picture, they've gotten it out of themselves and no one sees it but them.
They did it and they moved on. Conversation AI really seems like a tool to target, to locate this stuff, and then put the power, the kind of action that's taken as a result of that location, let's say, and put that in the hands of whoever happens to be using it. For example, Times and Wikimedia, they're the first to kind of try this out. Times is using it to detect and then automatically blocking if it detects positive, let's say, of trollish or you know, bad behavior, bad language, whatever the case may be. And then the humans go in, the humans march in, and they do whatever they're going to do there. They have like a smaller pool of things to basically approve or reject for good. So it's a tool to kind of help find these things. I guess they trained it with 17 million comments from Time Stories, with 130,000 discussions from Wikipedia pages. And they say it's 92% effective, 10% false positive rate. And I mean, you know, taking that Facebook story as the example, I mean, that I don't know if that's necessarily considered like a false positive in the world of AI. Like, yes, it was triggered, but it was yet to be decided on. And then it was decided on and put back up. So in essence, it's kind of doing what AI does all the time, although with a little bit of human interaction. It made a mistake, it learned from that mistake, and now going forward, it's going to do something different. So
Yeah, I'm a fan of this work. I hope Google. I mean, they've called it tackling the world's toughest geopolitical challenges, or one of them. Mm-hmm. And I agree, it truly is. Like, the way we're communicating online, we are quickly learning there are many cracks in the cement, and we've got to figure out a way to fill those. However, I think it's always important to remind ourselves, and I have to do this too, but it's really important to remind ourselves that when companies are striving for this level of, I don't want to call it, the word censorship isn't right, but this level of machine learning so that the machines can do massive amounts of work that would be impossible without, you know, a fleet of people to do it. Mm-hmm. When we're asking those machines to do it and something gets pulled away, or even if a human being in charge of something at Facebook pulls it away for you, just using Facebook as the example again, it's important to remember that we're not talking about squashing free speech here. We're talking about editing something you said on a platform that is owned and run by an independent company.
Right.
It isn't like some government forum where you were shut down because you were being critical of the government or something like that, where you could say, yeah, you were censoring me. So it's always an important distinction to make that if somebody comes on a website and says a bunch of stuff and it gets removed, moderated in whatever way it was moderated, machines or otherwise, people have a tendency to go straight to censorship, or you are repressing my, in this country, First Amendment rights, and whatever the equivalency is across the world. It's not the way it works. It's basically their call. If they don't want you on there, they don't have to have you on there. And the bigger it gets, the easier it is to get mired in the nuances of that argument. And I realize that there are some arguments to be made about a platform that big with that many users becoming a public forum in a way that should be protected in terms of free speech. So we could have those kinds of arguments, but I just think it's important to remind ourselves that it's a thing that we get to use and not this live or die sort of interface between us and you know, powers that be at a government or something like that.
Right. That's a good point.
Well, the verdict is in. According to Tom's Guide, the Galaxy S7 takes slightly better photos than the new iPhone 7 Plus. While it's very difficult to tell with the naked eye, some of the iPhone 7 photos had a slight haze to them compared to the Samsung phone, and they had some graininess. Also, Consumer Reports is saying that their initial testing shows that there's no improvement from the iPhone 6 to the iPhone 7 in the camera. So what do you think, Scott? Are we being fooled into thinking we need to pay $900 for this new iPhone 7 because of the camera?
Well, this is one of the first iterations of the phone that I'm not jumping to get immediately. We talked a bit pre-show about some of the reasons why, but one of the reasons is, and look, I'm an Apple fan. I really like their products, but there's not a giant leap happening across the board with this particular device. I like the new home button, but again, it's a button, and the 7S will certainly have that button. I'm not feeling as compelled this time around, and hearing that the camera is on par with the best mobile cameras out there, but nothing revolutionary or even incrementally evolutionary, is kind of putting an additional damper on my speed to go get anything new. I'm just not feeling the motivation like I would have otherwise. Now, they've made a big push with the two cameras, and you're going to get depth of field effects and this sort of thing. And a lot of that's not even shipped with the phone yet, software-wise. So I think the jury's still out on in terms of what that stuff will do, whether that'll be really cool and effective the way it was demonstrated on stage, or whether that ends up being more of a gimmick. You know, who knows until we get there. But this is a trusted source for reviews like this. Tom'sGuide.com is a place I always go to. And what he's telling me is that it's just not that big of a leap, so why spend the extra money?
But good is good, right? So, good, I mean, if it's great, the same as the previous iPhone and it had a pretty good camera, yay, it didn't get worse, I suppose. Right. I mean, I was looking at the side-by-sides, and yeah, they were pretty close. There was just a little bit of, I don't know, it seemed like the S7 had a little bit more detail in the really bright kind of blooming parts of a photo, or taking a picture of a, you know, downtown with clouds in the sky. You saw a little bit of kind of color like contrast dimension in the clouds on the S7 versus the iPhone, but they both look pretty similar. They're pretty good either way. I mean, no matter what, you're getting a pretty
yeah, and it's really hard to gauge. Like, yeah, looking at the two, it's difficult to make that distinction anyway, but since this is an area that Apple's always been able to tout quite a bit and be able to say, well, regardless of what you think about the entire ecosystem or how things are going between the two major brands, between Android and iOS, you can always say, well, we've got the best camera. And they've been able to say that pretty confidently for years, for maybe since the beginning. Not so much now. It's either real close or a little behind. And that's a weird place for them with the camera, since the camera is one of the biggest selling points of the device.
Yeah, I mean, Tom's guide says if you really just want the best camera, the S7 is what you need to get, the Galaxy S7. So, I mean, I guess if you're in the Android ecosystem and you're wanting to upgrade, don't be convinced that you need an iPhone.
Yeah.
I said that.
Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, and actually Bleak made this point in chat. It's, you know, maybe the upgrade this time is the zoom capability, which personally I would love to have that. I would love to have some sort of zoom option that isn't digital zoom. So I'd see that as a pretty good upgrade. Is it worth having the two camera housings there? I don't know. But it pulls it off. It does the trick. So That's good. I'm expecting to be in the market to buy a new car sometime pretty soon, relatively. And if Lyft is to be believed, it could be the last car I actually own. Lyft is placing its bets that the year 2025 will be the time that most citizens will rely entirely on self-driving taxis to get around, comparing car ownership to the DVD. They didn't just say that today. Of course, Lyft has some skin in the game, but the co-founder of Lyft, John Zimmer, said in 5 years, most Lyft rides will be provided to riders by its autonomous fleet. He went on one step further, saying that current rideshare drivers need not fear our autonomous car future, at least not in the short term, claiming that as riders open up to the idea of rideshare, more drivers will actually be needed to kind of get through that transition, not to mention human drivers can traverse difficult terrain that may be difficult for autonomous vehicles. So you've got job security is what he's saying, but only for the next 5 to 8 years. And that's better than nothing, I suppose. I don't know what happens then. Then it's like, well, we got you there. Now we don't need you anymore. I think that's what drivers are probably afraid of if they're worried about their job.
They compare it to the DVD. So I couldn't. Yeah. I know what they mean. Like, we thought, you know, DVDs were going to last forever and everything. But I can't help but imagine that, like, I'm going to have just a bunch of cars sitting around and I'm going to turn them into, like, decorations, hang them from the tree to scare away the birds.
You're going to use your cars as, like, coasters for your mug.
Right, coasters. Yeah. And, you know, we, like, make things out of them. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Everybody every day says, here's when you're going to stop driving your own car. And it's a different date or a different year. What do you think, Scott?
The DVD thing is a goofy comparison, mainly because it's just a physical media that was replaced by a higher definition physical media.
Yeah, good point.
So are they waiting for teleportation to then say self-driving cars are like the Blu-rays of, like, it's weird. I think it's a weird comparison. They could have used other obsolete scenarios that I think would have worked better. Aside from that, the only thing I'm actually kind of all with Lyft on this. I think that this will be the norm. I'm not so sure 2025 is the year. Any more than today, again, with the DVDs, I could go down to Walmart and buy a DVD of anything I want because they're still making everything of both. So In a way, that comparison stings them a little bit again because what they're describing is a technology that, while deprecated for sure in today's current streaming and high-res climate, DVDs are still being sold en masse at various retailers and online. So is he saying that we'll all be doing self-driving cars, but we'll also have a little something in the garage? Like, it's a little bit weird to compare that. But all of that aside, outside of the date and outside of that weird comparison, I'm fairly convinced that there will come a day in my lifetime, certainly in the lifetime of my kids, where ownership of a car seems like the weirdest thing you old people ever did. I really believe that.
I hope so. I mean, I would love to get rid of parking lots. Like, they're just ugly and gross. Like, could we do something about that, you know?
And everywhere. And occupy much space. Mm-hmm. All over the place, yeah.
And they paved the parks to put in a parking lot. Or whatever they paved to put in the parking lot. I never know that song.
Well, I have a question for you guys. I don't know if anyone's ever asked this before, but I just thought of it. And I keep wanting to ask people when we're having this conversation, either on shows or whatever. Here's my, this says more about me than anything, but here's my big concern about self-driving cars that no one ever addresses. They're a big fleet of autonomous vehicles, and one of them comes and picks a dude up, takes him where he needs to go, drops him off. Now, if some car, let's say it's 1 o'clock in the morning and I need to get home, and some autonomous car just got through picking up some drunk dude who yacked all over the backseat of the car, took him home, and then comes to get me, I don't want to be in this car after the guy yacked in it. You know what I'm saying? No one ever talks about how they're going to make sure none of that happens.
Like, puke sensors.
Yeah, sensors.
Puke sensors.
It's got to be sensors.
The robot going to go, oh, we got a problem here, and take it back to base? Like, I hope so. No. I just am when they're thinking of those details, that's all.
Well, if robots can, if robots can stop trolls, they can sense puke. I mean, everyone knows that, Scott.
It's a weird future that we're about to live in.
I sometimes feel like I'm already there.
Yeah.
Well, last week, Samsung officially recalled the Note 7, and now we're hearing a little bit more about how this dangerous disaster could have happened to the electronics company. Bloomberg reports that in a rush to compete with the rumored lackluster iPhone 7, Samsung rushed the production and testing process of the Galaxy Note 7, and that some of the problems with batteries catching fire could have been avoided had they not sped up the production timeline to get the phones into the hands of consumers before those same consumers could order that iPhone 7. Sources tell Bloomberg the fiasco is also a problem of a lack of leadership at Samsung. Lee Kun-hees, the chairman of the electronics unit, had a heart attack in 2014 and has yet to have been replaced. And those filling his spot temporarily overlooked the fact that the Galaxy Note 7 was simply not ready to go to market.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about the Samsung Note 7 on this show quite a bit, but this is actually really interesting. I think the part of what's going on here, and the article points this out, is that it's kind of a cultural issue underlying here. In Korea, Lee's son is basically the heir apparent of the company. Lee, of course, had the heart attack, but he's not, kind of based on cultural standards, he's not allowed to step into that role as long as Lee is alive, essentially. And so as a result, Samsung, from a leadership standpoint, is kind of stunted. Now, I think that after all of this has happened, and this is a huge issue for Samsung to overcome. I mean, they have to really kind of rewrite, you know, their customer loyalty, their dedication to their customers, reclaim a lot of these people that they're going to lose in the process, and they are going to lose users in the process. But as a result of this, I think that they're kind of rewriting things and bringing Lee's son into the board, but that still doesn't give him full kind of power to maneuver something like this, which was really just a sudden, you know, a huge kind of critical issue that needed fast response, and he just didn't have the ability to do it.
Well, funny enough, it played into the hands of Apple in a weird way.
Yeah, it really did.
Not that anyone expected, but like Apple coming out and saying, yeah, our new phone's not going to have a headphone jack, should have been a bigger problem, but looked tiny and silly compared to something blowing up in your back pocket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think the whole brand is tarnished. Like, you know, just talking about the S7, you know, which has this great camera and is not going to explode. Like, I think a lot of people just see that as like, oh, the S7, that's the one that explodes, right? Like, no, it's not. But I mean, I just think their brand is tarnished.
There's confusion. There's definitely, that's a really good point. Really, really a lot of potential for confusion for people who don't follow this close enough to mm-hmm. actually know the difference between the Note 7 or the Galaxy S7, the mm-hmm. S7 Edge. They all have 7 in them, so they all must be bad, whatever the case may be.
But, you know, we love a story, and this one was just ripe for the telling, right? Like, you know, Samsung always tries to get out before Apple. Like, they always do that every year. And so, you know, it was released on August 3rd, and last year it was released on August 13th. So it's like a 10-day difference. I don't know. I mean, I think, they messed up. It's not, I don't think it's something above what Apple would do, try to get out, you know, early, right, or do something like that to be competitive in the market. So who knows?
Yeah.
Well, there's also a related story. The Wall Street Journal says Samsung is denying claims that Galaxy Note 7s that exploded in China, that they exploded because of battery issues. They say it was something outside of the battery. China, of course, has not been included in the recall. Samsung says the fires claiming to be caused by faulty batteries in China are due to, quote, outside factors. The devices that exploded were bought after Samsung's official launch in China on September 1st. So they're saying it was something else that did it.
Wait a minute. What else did? But okay. I mean, look, you sell millions of phones. I guess you're going to have a percentage. Some of those are going to explode and have, I don't know, coffee creamer in them, and no one can explain why. Like, I understand that weird things happen, but it seems like if they're blowing up, I don't know. That seems fishy to me. If they're blowing up, they're probably blowing up for the same reason. If it's an outside source, what are they suggesting? Your pocket was warm. You got to quit your plastic explosive in the same bag you carry your phone in. Like, I don't know. That's a weird explanation.
No, well, they said it was still they said it was still inside the phone, just not the battery. It wasn't the batteries, but it was still the phone. So, yeah. I don't know. And in the chat room's pointing out, it combusted, not exploded. I should use my terms more carefully.
I mean, everybody's saying these batteries are exploding because what happens? They light on fire and set everything else on fire. So I suppose it's a difference in semantics, but still, it's kind of the same net result. And if this is the case, like if you start to see, because I guess over the weekend, China media was erupting over this. And, you know, now people are returning beyond their point of return. You know, they bought it when it first went on sale. They're outside of that return window. They want to return it because they start to see these things. It's like, hey, wait a minute. You know, I thought that these that weren't recalled are safe and now they're combusting. You know, like if this is actually a greater issue, like Samsung's got a huge... even larger hill to climb as far as this is concerned, because then they're talking about a completely other subset of batteries that they have to worry about. But right. I think Samsung is, at least from what I could tell here, they're convinced that, yeah, maybe it was like overheating from the outside or whatever, but that still doesn't give me much confidence. I put my phone in one of those dash mounts for driving, and on really hot days, like, it gets super hot. So, like, I don't know how much hotter you could actually make a phone. And if that's the kind of thing that's going to, you know, make a battery pop, then maybe I should stop doing that.
Yeah, well, China is the world's largest mobile market. So I think Samsung's trying to just say, everything's fine in China. Nothing to see here. No worries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, after the break, news from GoPro and Google for frequent travelers. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. I'm pretty sure I understand why the Samsung phones set on fire or explode or combust. I understand that. And I understand how autonomous cars are meant to work. That is my job. But do you know what is not my job? Understanding how mortgages work. In the past, we've just had to trust our mortgage broker and hope for the best. But Rocket Mortgage puts that power back into your hands. It brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, it's powerful, and it's completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. They have real solutions to your problems. No gimmicks. It's simple, it's quick, and you don't even have to leave your house to do it. With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or your tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. So there are so many reasons to complain. Now, we're always connected to our smartphones. We're ignoring our families. We're walking and texting and falling off curbs, walking right into the street. We're distracted all the time. But what if our constant connection has the power to help in a manhunt? That's what happened this morning when the New York Times says cell phone emergency alerts functioned as a high-tech wanted poster and might have helped in the capture of Ahmad Khan Rahami, the 28-year-old man wanted in connection with the bombings in New Jersey and New York over the weekend. Now, do you think this is a good thing, or is it a little too Minority Report for you, Scott?
No, I like it. I mean, we've got all these, like, I want more of this. We've got all these devices. There shouldn't be, I know when I say this, there's slippery slope arguments, so be nice to me, everyone at home. But, but like, you know, I was thinking the other day, we saw somebody at the park fall down. It was an older gentleman who seemed to be, we weren't sure if it was a heart attack or something was happening. And I got to thinking, we can quickly get 911 on the phone. Everybody's got a phone to call or whatever. But does everyone know what address we're at? Do we know what the corner's called? Do we have enough to give them that they'll know? Or wouldn't it be easier if somehow, kind of life alert style, you could just say, you know, beep, boop, beep on your phone and suddenly they'd know exactly where you were? And it makes me think more broadly about lots of things like this. If we need to find somebody, an Amber Alert is kind of the beginnings of this idea of sort of, let's let the crowd help source the problem. And we've all got these devices now, so why not more of that? And there are probably a million arguments as to why we're already treading in places that are going to give us even less control over our privacy and so on. But I'm a big fan of this kind of collective societal fixing of problems, whether that's finding a fugitive or getting somebody returned who was kidnapped or just simply getting somebody to a hospital who needs it. So I say, why not? I think it's a great way to catch the criminal.
Yeah, especially if there is some sort of inherent harm to someone or, you know, in that regard. I think the risk is being over-notified almost, where you get to the point to where you just don't even consider or look because
you get notified so much that it's a bother, and so you automatically overlook it. I guess in that regard, you're just not part of the solution necessarily. You're just not paying attention to it at all, and maybe someone else will. So I still think it's probably a good thing, especially if there's some sort of harm or damage that could come.
Right. Yeah. Well, time sensitive. I mean, these are usually amber.
Time sensitive is a big key too.
Right. So that's why they're usually amber alerts. But this was, you know, the first time it was a wanted poster. So I guess we will see this in the future. Bill de Blasio was the one who approved it in New York. It was by location. So it was everyone just in New York, but not really outside of New York, which was weird because he could have gotten out. You know, New Jersey was where one of the bombings happened. Mm-hmm. Some people are also criticizing the fact that there was no actionable anything on it. It was just an alert and said call 911. That was the only thing you could do. There was no link. It said, like, look at the, you know, talk, consult the media to see a picture, you know, which I thought was interesting. I guess most people have access to the media, and it was all over the media. So yeah, I think it will be interesting to see how they use this in the future.
I realize what I'm arguing for requires some standards, and for them to say, you know, there has to be a way for a photo to always be there, or any pertinent sketch information or whatever it may be. And all of that's much more complicated, but there are ways, I think, in a kind of a, you know, slightly ramshackle way, we can come together. I feel like this is an exact example of that. And maybe we just got lucky this time and it just happened this way. But I think it bodes well for this sort of thing in the future. We've all got these devices. We may as well do some good with them and not just tweet all day sort of with them. Sounds like an old man talking, and I tweet all day too. But, you know, it's nice once in a while to accomplish something with them.
Yeah, completely agree. Google launched a new app for Android and iOS. It's called Google Trips. It's focused on providing pertinent travel information to you based on your search history, your inbox contents, and anything that you search for within the app. Basically, all the stuff that Google is keeping on you if you've agreed to allow that to happen. Itineraries are pulled from your Gmail account dynamically. So things like plane tickets, hotel reservations, restaurant reservations, those are all cataloged automatically for reference while you're traveling. All of it's stored for offline use. You can do that in advance so that when you're there, you can avoid expensive, you know, roaming fees or not having any data access whatsoever. And then being like, where am I staying tonight? I don't know where my hotel is. I can't get any data. I think this is great. Now I just need a really nice vacation to test it out on. So I might, you know, talk to Leo and Lisa about that and see if I can go on a road trip or maybe fly to Belize and test the app and do like a segment for new screensavers.
Great idea. Now, doesn't on your Android phone, doesn't it already do this? I remember when I used to have an Android phone, it would just go into my Gmail and take out like flights and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, Inbox, I know, does this. You know, they have these like traffic bundles or whatever. So it's, you know, basically it's taking a lot of these things, and also Google now, of course, surfaces this stuff. It's taking all this stuff that Google's kind of doing in other ways and putting it, you know, packaging it into a very specific focused travel app for tracking all this stuff, so you have it all in one place. Some of the things, one of the things that it can do if you do happen to have data is it's going to recommend things around where you happen to be, which kind of reminds me of a Google property called Field Trip, which is actually a Niantic app. Niantic, of course, moved on from Google and became, well, the Pokemon Goers, essentially. But that was a really cool app, like really useful when you're traveling to be out and based on your location. Hey, why don't you check this out? You're only, you know, 500 yards away or whatever. So I like this. Anyone going on a trip? Anyone want to test it out?
My wife will. I mean, she loves this stuff. So anytime I saw this today earlier this morning, just in my newsfeed, and I went, oh, man, this is going to be her favorite thing. She loves getting the entire thing all figured out, usually with various services, you know, some services more than others, but she's got like full itinerary all planned out way ahead. Our trip to Anaheim in November has been planned since June, and she's got all the stuff she needs for it and all of it's ticketless, and she's way into it. This seems like this might be a good way for her to take that even further. So I'm excited about it. It's like, but like you just told the tale of that great app that Niantic made, and then they took off or it got deprecated and it's gone now or whatever. I always worry about that with Google. I love stuff they make. And then 2 years later, they're like, we don't know if we're doing that anymore. So I hope this one sticks. This seems like one that should, because everyone needs to travel. Everybody's got to plan their stuff. Everybody needs a good cohesive system for keeping all that stuff together. And Google certainly has access to it more than anyone else. So why not? So I hope this one sticks.
Yeah, I guess, I suppose you just never really know, which is kind of sad. We all thought Reader would stick around, and of course that did not happen. But, you know, this really ties into a lot of the things that Google's doing already. I don't know why that makes me think it's going to stick around, but I guess I have hope.
Yeah, I mean, I use TripIt, and, you know, I reserved VRBO just for a couple weeks from now, and TripIt automatically, you know, said, oh, you're going on a trip. But I downloaded Google Trips, and it did not find that VRBO reservation yet. So maybe it's still searching.
Yeah, maybe scanning.
So, and I tried it on the iPad, and I tried to plan a trip to Vegas, and it didn't let me. So maybe it's just early days.
It's just telling you that you shouldn't go to Vegas.
Yeah, it may be saving you from a lot of trouble.
It knew it was a fake trip because I wasn't really going.
Right.
Probably knew that.
Probably.
GoPro made some big product announcements today, including a drone and two cameras. Let's start with the drone. The Karma is an $800 drone that's easy to use, has Hollywood-style camera stabilization, according to the CEO, and it arrives in October. It also folds up to fit in your backpack. And then the Hero 5 Session and the Hero 5 Black are the newest versions of the GoPro camera. They're waterproof without a case. They're reportedly more simple to use than previous versions. The Black is for extreme sports, costs $400. The Session costs $300. This holiday shopping season is, of course, crucial to the future success of GoPro, whose cameras did not do as well as they should have last year. You going to get any of these things, Scott?
I like these. GoPros a lot. I've always liked GoPros. I think they're rad. I think footage from GoPros are always some of my favorite things to see. But I don't like snowboard like a crazy person or do any kind of weird cliff diving or underwater hoo-ha or any of that. And so because I'm not doing any of that stuff, I don't really need the rugged features or the ability to get 1080p video under 10 feet of water with sharks or whatever. So I tend to just go, well, my phone's good enough. And I have a feeling I'm not alone. I mean, there's a lot of people that are affecting their sales that are saying, nothing against GoPro, but isn't my phone good enough for what we're doing today? And there are less people buying that device. And I don't know if that means we need more active, you know, adrenaline junkies out there, or if it's just simply the way things move. And as cameras get better on phones and personal devices, we are less likely to need a fully waterproof, you know, crash-resistant camera that needs to normally be mounted on our head to be worth anything.
We have this guy. His name's Brian. He pushes buttons to switch to the video and moves sliders to make the audio sound good. And he is a big-time GoPro/drone guy. What do you think about this, Brian?
Like you said, I'm really into action cams and GoPro specifically. But I think the biggest part about this announcement is that it's modular, where you can take out the stabilization device and use that separately from the drone. Whereas, like, we were looking at DJI just recently at IFA, where they were kind of promoting the same sort of technology, but it wasn't something that you could detach from the drone. And I think as far as, like, my extreme sports that I like to do is, like, motorcycle riding. And I've been waiting a long time for GoPro to release a drone like this. Mm-hmm. And I think the main aspect that I like of it is that it's so compact and you can throw it in your backpack. A lot of the drones that people like to use now, like the DJI that I mentioned, they're not that compact and they don't fold up very well. So I think this is kind of... if you've been on the fence and waiting for something that you could pack up and then take with you somewhere that's a little bit more rugged, that's like my kind of... Because when I go to places, all I can really carry is a backpack.
Right.
So for me, it's great, you know. But like Scott said, you know, I when I go on vacation or something like that, I rely on my phone now. I don't even bring my DSLR with me most places because the camera phones that I have are good enough. But... now that this drone's out, I think it's $800. It's definitely on my Christmas list. We'll see if I can get one for review, though.
Yeah, that might be the better better option.
So it's $800, but then the camera is extra, right? So it's $1,099 with the Hero 5 Black and $1,000 with the Hero 5 Session. But that's a really good point that you can separate the two, because the drone itself is the same price as the DJI Phantom, but then you can't use you can't take the camera off and attach it to your helmet to do something else, right?
Right. And I think I was reading, I mean, all this is pretty new, so I was just reading it on my break time earlier today, but I think you can use it with the older versions of the GoPro too. You don't have to buy the newest GoPro to use it. So, you know, I have a 3 and a 4, so, you know, I would just get the drone and then attach that to it.
Wow. Yeah, I think what Brian's saying is we aren't excited about this because we're old.
we aren't very action-y at this stage.
I think we're all going to end up with drones at some point if we don't already. I love drones, and I think the combination makes perfect sense, and I think it's smart for GoPro to kind of tie their wagon to that a little bit. Yeah. It seems like maybe the future for the kinds of cameras that they make. But what would be really neat and nifty is to see them focus. I mean, it seems like a backward step in a lot of ways because it's a dedicated camera. And I definitely think they're putting dedicated cameras in the right place, drones and, you know, somebody's weird helmet and all these other things to get the kind of shots they're getting. But maybe a step back and into the consumer space a little bit where, you know, better video for popping it on your pocket or making smaller cameras that can be wearables but not, you know, a big brick of a camera or whatever. Maybe that's a place they should invest some time. I don't know, but it is kind of hard to watch them go from like this really cutting edge thing to people ignoring it because they think they have something that's good enough in their phone. And I'm not sure they do. I just think they think they do.
Right.
So yeah. It's not their fault. It's just the way the market's shifting.
Yeah, I mean, I happen to know a whole handful of 11, 12, and 13-year-olds that would love to have this, you know, but it's like $800. So that's the price. So, you know, you take someone like Brian that not only like, does these extreme sports, like that's more in line, maybe, on his, it's on his Christmas list. So it's in the realm of possibility for him. And, you know, and he appreciates video. So I think there's a lot of people like that. But, yeah, I don't know, maybe not enough. Maybe not enough Brians out there.
Who knows, Brian? Maybe Father Robert will get you a really nice Christmas present.
You know, Father Robert comes from the school of build it yourself. So I feel like he'll probably try and build a rugged competitor, you know, rather than try and buy a GoPro drone.
It might even be better than the GoPro drone.
It depends on how much time he has.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't have a lot of time these days. Scott, this one's for you. Rob Pardo is the lead designer of World of Warcraft. He was at Blizzard for 17 years up until 2 years ago when he left his role. He's now launching his own studio called Bonfire Studios. Currently, just 5 developers, including himself. The new studio has already raised $25 million in funding. It's gearing up to get started on its first release. He basically says he wants a company big enough to create excellent games, but small enough to still be super connected with it. Is this news exciting to you? Or are you? I have to imagine you're a big fan because he's like he's basically the Miyamoto of the most successful video game ever.
That's true. I mean, obviously, everything over there at Blizzard's a team effort. But there's no doubting Rob Pardo's role in the, especially the early days of World of Warcraft, its early success and subsequent successes with games like Hearthstone. He was willing to stick his neck out quite a bit for projects internally that a lot of people weren't sure were going to go all the way, and they did. It was a bit of a surprise when he left a couple of years ago, and him doing this startup almost 2 years ago exactly is about right, because I'm guessing that's how long the non-compete was in the contract, was probably 2 years. Yeah. That all being said, it's even more impressive to me the talent he has with him and the backing. And the backing's coming from crazy sources, Chinese sources that own Riot or own huge portions of Riot Games are investing in this. The Andreessen people are doing it. $25 million is no small amount, and probably they'll end up with additional funds in the future. What really is impressive, though, the people he brought with him. He has Josh Mascara, who arguably is one of the best, or was one of the best designers of Blizzard. He took the Diablo 3 franchise and with an expansion and patches turned that into one of the best games they've ever made, and is largely lauded for the success of that game. The lead programmer and developer of the Battle.net platform, which is their digital distribution platform, is over there with them. The lead for all their cinematics and art at Blizzard, which if anyone knows anything about Blizzard, they know that cinematics and art are a gigantic part of what that company is. And he's been there forever and he's over there with him. So he has pulled some of the best talent Blizzard ever had. They're all ex-Blizzard people. If there was ever a chance for a bunch of ex-Blizzard guys to actually pull it off, this is absolutely the chance. And I'm super excited to see what they end up coming up with.
And I'm sure you're going to have to wait a while, because it sounds like they don't have anything. They're basically just beginning the business up at this point.
Yeah, if they're going to take the way Blizzard makes games with them, if it's going to be part of their you know, their modus operandi, then we're going to be a good long time. So tuck in, everybody. No new games for a while.
This is the beginning. This is only the start.
Well, with all that investment, are they still considered like an independent gaming creators or not?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, Blizzard passed this level of company probably 12 years ago. You know, they were kind of quietly doing their thing and being very successful. But when World of Warcraft hit and hit big, the things exploded for that company. And even today, we're guessing now because they're not releasing these numbers, but we think they're in the 12 million range for people actively playing World of Warcraft right now. And if you times that by $15 a month, that is an awful lot of revenue for just one game. Doesn't count their other four or five active franchises. So they're well beyond, you know, they're the Microsoft of game companies, really, in many ways. But these guys are in a place where they're kind of starting off at that weird middle place where they're still kind of small and they can keep that kind of connective, you know, community tissue happening like they Rob talks about, but also big enough with enough funding and enough backing to take on bigger projects, stuff that takes, you know, a decent amount of infrastructure and server cost and that sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to see if they can hit the ground running like that and not blow out because they ran faster than they could run. That's happened to plenty of game studios in the past. 38 Studios is a good example of that, Kurt Schilling's old joint. Mm-hmm. And these companies need time to bake, to cook. So what I think their hope is we all know each other. We work really great to each other, and we have amazing talent together. And now we've got this money, so we're basically just Blizzard Junior, and we can just do like Blizzard did 10 years ago and take off. And it's entirely possible. I actually pretty bullish on these guys. I think they're going to do great.
Nice.
Well, get your GIFs ready or your GIFs. Today, Twitter announced that GIFs, videos, photos, polls, and quote tweets no longer count as your 140 characters. So bring on the verbiage, my friends.
Really happy that they're including both GIFs and GIFs in this plan. Because I wasn't sure.
Finally, our long national nightmare is over. Actually, this is a huge deal because I put multiple images together all the time.
Yeah.
I want to say more about what I'm doing. I can't. And I don't want to do that anymore. So thank you, Twitter, for doing a thing today you should have probably done 9 years ago.
Yeah. I'm really happy about this, too, because I always run into that issue and everything. At the same time, I can't help but be just a slightly torn on it, just from the sense that Twitter has kind of cut its teeth and built, you know, its reputation around keeping things short and brief, even with those image, you know, the links or whatever they happen to be. But then at the same time, 140 characters, not including all this other arbitrary stuff like URLs, all the characters in the URL, that's still pretty short. So, I mean, it makes sense that they would do this. I guess they're apparently also testing replies that would not include the username in the limit. So that would help too. I guess just
that'll definitely free it up. But it's so funny to think back why it was 140 in the first place. And it was a text limit on traditional text phones. And this just doesn't exist anymore. It's like not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
And so I'm fine with them keeping short format because clearly that is the reason it exists. Like we have got this short format, quick burst thing. But thank you for not taking up 20 characters in a URL anymore. That's all I'm saying.
Agreed. All right, we have a voicemail. Love it. It doesn't happen very often, but we have one today. Voicemail from Daniel in Cincinnati. What you got, Daniel?
This is Daniel from Cincinnati. Everyone keeps talking about smartwatches still needing the killer app. There already is one. It's called Don't Annoy the Wife. I put my phone on silent mode a lot for work or taking pictures. And then my wife would call or text me, and I would miss it. So I thought perhaps a $150 Pebble smartwatch would help by sending me notifications to my wrist. It worked. When my phone is on silent mode and my wife calls or texts me, my Pebble smartwatch vibrates, and I can see that she texted or called. Or my son at school call. Or my daughter texted from marching band. So the killer feature that helps our marriage is called Don't Annoy the Wife. Or kids. Love the show.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I have missed that. I need to charge up my smartwatch again and start wearing it because those are the things that I actually do really like about it. But then at the same time, sometimes I have to ask myself, like, is that enough to justify wearing it all the time? But, you know, it comes in handy, I suppose. So, yeah.
I think, yeah. I mean, I don't control my notifications like I should, because they all come, not all of them, but a lot of them come in. And but yeah, it is nice to be connected. Mm-hmm. I think that that'll maybe be my goal for the week, to go in and get rid of all the notifications except for the really important stuff.
Yeah, I had to do that. And I will definitely say that that helped. I mean, if you're, it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier. If all you're doing is getting notified about things, then at a certain point, it's like you stop paying attention, or you kind of get annoyed by it almost. Mm-hmm. So it's good to kind of pare it down and only let the good things come through.
Mm-hmm.
Up next, Nest has a product announcement. Let's just say it had unintended consequences. But first, let's take a minute to thank Epson. They're the sponsor of this episode. Epson's revolutionary cartridge-free EcoTank line of printers for home and office introduce a new age in printing. The EcoTank ET4550, it's a wireless all-in-one printer that doesn't use ink cartridges. It features an innovative refillable ink tank, earning it the title of CES 2016 Innovation Awards honoree. So, you know, no more out of ink frustration. You go to print, there's no more ink there, then you got to find the cartridges, whatever. Super frustrating. Here, it includes up to 2 years of ink, equal to 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. You can save up to 80% on ink with low-cost replacement bottles. It's powered by Precision Core printing technology. It has auto two-sided printing and a 30-page auto document feeder. Easy wireless printing from tablets and smartphones. That's not always, you know, you can't always expect easy and wireless printing from your devices. Here you've got that, thankfully. All EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value. With Epson's EcoTank line of printers, you'll have the freedom to print without running out of ink. The Epson EcoTank system was named the 2016 Small Biz Windows Printer of the Year. And you can see why. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank today to transform the way your home, your office, or work group prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the Epson EcoTank printers. That's Epson.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson for their support. Epson, exceed your vision.
TNT's fan of the day is Sundar Ramasamy on Twitter, who says he watches all Twitch shows while working out.
Yeah, get buff.
It's motivational and educational. I support that completely.
Yeah, it's a nice gym with a big screen TV. I'm assuming that's in the basement. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of weights, though, if that's his own personal gym, but it does look like it.
He knows what he's doing.
Wow. Could you lift all those weights? Do you even not lift,
same,
Jason?
Not at the same time.
How about you, Scott? You even lift?
Not often enough. But when I'll say this, when I go to the gym and work out, it's mostly cardio, but I listen. It's always podcasts when I go.
Yeah, so.
I know. Me too. Always podcasts. Well, show us how you listen, watch, or whatever you do. Just record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it.
All right, look, Nest has been through a lot lately, okay? It's been shamed in the press for underperforming and basically not living up to the expectations set forth by its parent company, Google Alphabet, when it was acquired in 2014. So we can forgive them for leaking the as-yet-unannounced Pixel phone that's expected to signal a big shift in Google's hardware strategy, right? We can forgive them. In the Netherlands, Nest ran a TV ad for its products. And sure enough, in one of the shots, we get a close-up of the upcoming Pixel phone, at least, well, the front and back of it. It closely, if not almost exactly, matches the rumored leaks that we've seen the past few weeks, and it comes from inside the Googleplex. The hits just kind of keep coming for Nest. I don't know if this will really fall down hard on them. There is an expected announcement. We have not heard an official announcement of the kind of unveiling, but everybody's looking at October 4th. As the potential kind of unveiling of these devices and a whole lot more Google Home and all this kind of stuff. But don't you just love it when the people inside the company are the ones that do the leaking? Do you think this was intentional, Scott?
I do, yeah. I think the Pixel phone's going to be a huge deal. And I think that it makes sense for them to leak it and to get the word out and get people excited. I also don't like the name, because if somebody has to take a broken Pixel in, they have to tell a guy he has a dead Pixel. And that's a problem with monitors and displays, and we're all going to get confused. So I really wish they would have thought about that. But besides all of that, it's that whenever I hear about a new Pixel-branded device coming out of Google, I get excited, and I want to see what this thing's like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do think maybe this is an effort to make more like, you know, the kind of Apple, like, I saw this here, right. I saw this, and, you know, just like that, where we just, you know, you got to believe that there's someone maybe feeding rumors out to the right people within Apple just to, you know, get the excitement going.
But this was on TV. In the Netherlands.
In the Netherlands. That's where it all starts.
It's like Pokemon Go, but for... I shouldn't say for adults. We're all playing Pokemon Go, or adults. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like this neat metagame of trying to figure it out and find the conspiracy. And, you know, I've been watching a lot of Mr. Robot, but I think that even without that, I would be interested in seeing what was going on in Netherlands TV commercials.
This wasn't the first time that this has happened either. A couple of years ago, I think it was, yes, there we go, right before the Nexus 5 was unveiled, they were doing a statue unveiling of Android 4.4. I think that was KitKat, I believe. Yeah. And in the promotional video of the statue unveiling, there was this frame of the as yet unreleased Nexus 5. And everybody, you know, it was the question then. It was like, wait a minute, did they do that on purpose? Mm. And, you know, trying to figure it out. So I think Google knows its strategy here. It's a couple of weeks out from when we're expected to hear about this thing. So they put little bits and drabs out there, and then everybody talks about it like we're doing right now. And I'm sorry, I totally played into their game. Dang it.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for joining us. We already talked about Boop. Go subscribe to Boop. You're also a every Wednesday guest on the Daily Tech News Show with Tom Merritt. You're an artist. What else are you working on?
Oh, there's always a million things. If people haven't, I mean, I know people listening like a Daily Tech Show, obviously, because they're listening to this one right now. If you like daily shows, I started a morning show. It's been 5 years, but it's still going strong. Every day, Monday through Thursday, and again on Thursday afternoon for a bonus episode. I record that with Brian Ibbett every single day. So if you're looking for something different, that's not your typical morning show, drive time, honking horns, garbage morning show. That is not us. If you want something that's a little bit geeky, has great guests, great conversation, a good time with the news, that sort of stuff, check it out. You can find that over at frogpants.com/TMS. That's short for The Morning Stream.
I love watching how successful The Morning Stream is, and I can't believe that it's been 5 years, because I remember when you launched it, and I remember you saying something to the effect of, I've always wanted to have a morning show, so I decided to do it, and we'll see what happens. And here it is 5 years later, and you're still doing 4 days a week, you know, a long morning format show. That is so awesome that it's going so
well.
It's great.
It's grown well past what I thought it would, and you're right. Like, sometimes, I just say this to people out there trying to come up with or trying to get a project off the ground. Sometimes you just have to make it because you would want it.
Yeah.
And for no other reason. Don't necessarily always look at your metrics or what your potential audience is or any of that stuff. Sometimes you just need to go, I don't like morning show formats, but if I made one, I would do this, and then just make it and see what happens. And it ended up being one of the smartest things I ever did and one of the pillars of the network. And it's something I absolutely love doing every day. So there's some lesson in that somewhere, but mainly I just love doing it. So if people want to check it out, it's out there for you. And if you don't, that's okay, because I'm going to keep making it. So
exactly. You keep making it for yourself, even if not for anyone else. I think the message there is follow your heart.
There you go. Follow your heart and follow me on Twitter at Scott Johnson.
That works too. Scott, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Always a pleasure getting you on. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us. That's TNT@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail like we got today. That was awesome. 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find the show on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
If you want to subscribe to the show, you can do that at twit.tv/TNT. And follow your heart or follow me on Twitter. I'm at Megan Maroney.
There must be someone on Twitter that is at your heart. So you can say follow your heart. I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Brian Burnett. And thanks for returning to us, to the land of the workers.
My pleasure.
Good to have you back. Thanks to Burke for scrolling words on the screen. Thanks to Kevin for making us look good. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everybody. I just gave myself a high five before you. I'm sorry.